Jesus was a working man and a hero you will hear. Born in the town of Bethlehem at the turning of the year, at the turning of the year. When Jesus was a little lad, streets rang with his name.
Welcome to Radio Free Kannada. This is Kevin Annett. Welcome back with my host, Ryan Gable. We're here every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and that was another song by our dear brother Phil Oakes, The Ballad of the Carpenter. And we think it's especially important to remind folks of that simple tale. Over the next couple of weeks, as the world, and especially America, prepares for the arrival of, I guess you could say, the person who personifies the everything opposite to Jesus Christ, and that's the Pope, the Bishop of Rome, Jorge Bergoglio. Now, we especially are dedicating the show to all those folks in America listening in who are preparing to confront, in various ways, conventional ways, but also spiritually, the arrival of Jorge Bergoglio. And I want to start in that whole discussion today by reciting a news item that we actually came out today. It's posted at itccs.org. I urge you to read it. It was an announcement from the ITCCS Central in Brussels. Let me just read it to you. It's entitled, Breaking News, September 12th, Pope Francis to curtail his American visit after Catholic child trafficking event is targeted for disruption. The World Meeting of the Family in Philadelphia is a meeting ground for in-house child rapists and killers. A planned disruption of a notorious child trafficking event in Philadelphia on September 26th has forced Jorge Bergoglio, alias Pope Francis, to cut short his upcoming diplomatic visit to the United States, according to sources in the Vatican. Local child abuse survivors and a special ITCCS team have targeted the World Meeting of Families event in Philadelphia for disruption after it was learned that the event will be a cover for a secret gathering of prominent child traffickers associated with the Catholic Opus Dei and Knights of Columbus groups. These traffickers include at least one cardinal and several bishops associated with Pope Francis's retinue. According to one Vatican source, upon learning of the planned disruption of the event, Pope Francis insisted on a revision of his itinerary to avoid any contact with the site of the protest, and he will apparently be leaving Philadelphia for Rome, quote, at least a day earlier than originally planned. However, the Pope still plans to appear at a special conference with local bishops in Philadelphia, including those clergy associated with this child trafficking network. Special ITCC advisor Kevin Annett commented today, quote, these conferences often include the ritual rape and killing of children, according to a growing number of witnesses, including from within the church. Now, we have learned that at least two children from the Navajo or Gila Indian reservations in Arizona will be ritually killed during the Pope's visit by the very men with whom he will be meeting and praying, and perhaps even by Jorge Bergoglio himself. Now, the other protests against the Pope, it will include an Aboriginal convergence to oppose Bergoglio's canonization of a genocidal California missionary, Junipero Serra, in Washington on September 23rd, and an ITCCS-sponsored action outside the United Nations on September 25th. But don't forget, spiritual elders and others will also be conducting public exorcisms at the site of Bergoglio's Catholic masses in New York and Washington. And there's a complete agenda of his itinerary and the actions being planned at itccs.org. Now, let me bring in Ryan for his remarks and thoughts about all this. Welcome, Ryan.
Hey, Kevin. It's great to be here again. My initial thoughts when you sent me this update was that, once again, as I mentioned last week, it's incredible that just such a small group of passionate people with the truth on their side can influence such a perceptually powerful man, supposedly this sovereign Vatican City that has so much influence and physical wealth in the world, and just a few people with the truth on their side can influence them to such great extent. I think that's a really great thing for our movement.
Absolutely, and I really want to emphasize that for folks listening. It's almost as if we're being shown time and again that it's not about numbers, it's about where you stand on this side of truth, and the ability for us to act on that truth consistently. So that should be a shot in the arm for a lot of us who are maybe doubting these days whether these things are having an effect. But I also wanted to highlight something, Ryan, that's in here. That's the news did come out of Brussels this last week. You see, the ITCCS has sources all over the place, one of them being in the Aboriginal communities in here in North America. And for some time, we've known that the Gila Indian Reservation in Arizona is providing children for these child sacrificial networks. Now, we know how easy it is for Native children to go missing, especially on reservations, where the chiefs are often, you know, the main drug dealers, the child traffickers, and they're in with criminal elements. But we know that one of the ways that these children are being provided is through front organizations, one of them being a thing in Santa Fe, New Mexico, called the Indigenous Language Institute. Now, from somebody who works there, we know for a fact that the Indian children are being trafficked through that institute to especially the Catholic Church networks like the Ninth Circle. So we know at least two children are slated, at just as they were in Montreal last August, they're being slated for these ritual killings. Well, Bergoglio is in America. It may be hard for some people to believe, but we have the witnesses, we have the historical record showing that these things do go on. So I wanted to especially flag that for people to let folks know that it's a matter of life and death for those children that you be out there having a public presence and the spiritual presence, and we'll talk about that as well.
And do a little bit of research before you do go out to something like this or before you talk about these topics with people, because otherwise you'll get ran over pretty quickly by a lot of ignorant rhetoric that people tend to spout when you bring up these topics. I was actually thinking this morning, I took a walk, and I think I brought this up when we first started Radio Free Kannada. We have all of these witnesses from all over the world. Most of them have never met each other before, and they all implicate the exact same people. They name names and faces, and they name the exact same people in these crimes, and they can explain, like in the case of Jimmy Savile, explicit details. Again, people not knowing each other, various women from all over the world explaining explicit details, naming people like Jimmy Savile in these crimes that were committed under the churches in the bowels of the church. And what tends to happen is if you actually think that what Kevin is saying or what I'm saying or what others like us are saying about these witnesses and about the people who have survived abuse, many Natives, you actually have to in some way believe in a very wild conspiracy that there are so many people that hate the church so badly that don't even know each other that they would get together and make up all of this supposed evidence to bring down the Pope or to bring down certain heads of state. I mean, I would think you have to believe in some crazy conspiracy theory just to oppose the witnesses that have come out against this. What do you think?
Well, the other agreed. And the other thing, of course, is it's you look at the actions of these people. I remember early on, over 20 years ago, a few of us held a rally outside the United Church head office in Vancouver. And one of the people who showed up at that was a Native woman, Harriet Nahani, who had seen a little girl called Maisie Shaw kicked to her death in the Alberni Residential School. She talked to reporters about that. Within 24 hours, the United Church head office had released a statement saying, we know nothing about this death and we didn't cover it up. Well, nobody had accused them of a cover-up at that point, but they overreacted, and by their action, you could see that they were guilty. They were acting out of a very guilty self-defensive spirit. The same thing is going on here. We let it be known that we knew that this World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia is where child traffickers and the Catholic Church meet and plan these things. We announce it, and what does the Pope do? He cuts short his American visit, which is mind-boggling because this trip for him and Obama was very important, and yet he's cutting it short simply because we know what is going on there in Philadelphia. So that's the proof. The actions of the guilty speak much more than anything we can say.
Oh, it absolutely does. And what I found really amazing, you and I were talking about this morning, is that the canonization of Junipero Serra on the 23rd of September, if you look into a history of this guy, and I did some pretty extensive research this morning. I actually wrote an article at thesecretteachings.info, and hopefully it'll be up at itccs.org. And if you go into the history of this man who committed mass genocide against Natives in California, you'll see that the Vatican actually responded to Native protests of this canonization by simply stating that, quote, he was a man of his time. So the Natives come out and other people say that, look, he committed genocide, and the church said, well, he was a man of his time, we're still going to canonize him, which basically is admittance to the crime. But basically, I think instills the sense that it's still policy today. It's still agreed upon today that this is the policy of the church. Otherwise, why would they still make him a saint, Kevin?
Well, Exactly. That proves what we're saying, that even a so-called liberal like Jorge Bergoglio, and I think most of that liberal thing is just a pose, you know, and this is proving that, whatever faction you are in the Catholic Church, the rock bottom belief is that non-Catholics do not have the right to live. And that when Junipero Serra went in there and literally caused the death, what was the figure in on one plantation alone that he operated, over 5,700 people died?
That's right. 5,700 people died at one mission.
Okay. And they said it's one of the oldest buildings in San Francisco, the Dolores Mission. There's hundreds of bodies buried under the parking lot. Now, of course, they cemented over the site so nobody could dig it up. But, you know, it's a mass grave. It's like the Catholic Church is one huge crime site.
It's a literal cover-up. They even admit that there's over 350 bodies buried under the church. They admit it, and it's just like that goes over people's heads. Like, well, they put a parking lot there, so.
Right. Well, you know, here's the point, Ryan, and everybody listening, that they don't see anything wrong with that. And in fact, Bergoglio, this is a direct quote from this bastard. He said, this is a direct quote. They're talking about Junipero Serra, and Bergoglio says, "We are greatly inspired by his zeal," unquote. What inspires Bergoglio, this pope, apparently, is the mass killing of non-Catholic Indians, because that's exactly what Junipero Serra did. So, I mean, how people can escape the simple truth that a crime in the past is not absolved by simply saying, well, everybody was thinking that way back then. If you're against what the person did, you don't canonize them. You don't say he's a saint. I mean, that's simple logic.
That's very true. And as a matter of fact, if you go back and you look at the actual literal definition of genocide coined by Raphael Lemkin, and I found an article today from theinquisitor.com that said this, and I'll quote it for you, Kevin. Quote, "Mission officials like Serra banned traditional ways and customs, including language, food, dress, marriage ceremonies, and of course, religion," end quote, in relation to the natives in California. That is literally the definition of genocide. And the Vatican says he didn't commit genocide. He was just a man of his time, i.e. he committed genocide, right, but we don't admit to it because we don't use those terms.
Well, the Vatican's playing the same word game the Canadian government does, or the New York Times did when they talked about the genocide in Canada. They put the adjective, you put the adjective cultural in front of it, and
negligence.
People go, well, you mean they didn't let them speak their language? Well, I mean, that's pretty mild, isn't it? What they leave out is the methods they use, for one thing. When you spoke your language, you got a nail through your tongue. You had your ears ripped off. You were tortured to death. I mean, these are accounts given to us by eyewitnesses, including the ones who buried the mangled bodies. We've got all of that posted at itccs.org. It happened in America just as much as Canada. And here's another example of how it happened. So, I mean, for anyone to there was an amazing remark by the mayor of Philadelphia. This guy, believe it or not, his last name is Nutter, N-U-T-T-E-R, if that's really his name. But Mayor Nutter made the remark, a pretty nutty remark. He said he didn't understand how anyone could accuse the Pope of a crime. I mean, does this guy live in the Middle Ages? Like, doesn't he read anything? Doesn't he understand, the nature of the Vatican? I mean, I know politicians are by nature quite obtuse, but that was an especially ridiculous remark by the mayor.
Well, they play the word games, and they release an official statement like that, whether they actually believe it or not, or if it was even written by one of the people in their cabinet. The typical reaction from the public is this is an authority figure, kind of like the Pope, the Papal, Papa, the father figure. Uh-huh. He's always right. You know, he never can be wrong. He can't be accused of a crime.
Right.
I mean, that seems to be kind of an overarching theme. There's an article I actually have. We'll talk about it in the second hour that claims that the Queen of England is a sovereign and she cannot be prosecuted for a crime, which she already has been.
No, you know, they're only telling half the truth. Under their law, the sovereign Queen of England cannot be tried under crown law. But the Canadian Criminal Code says under Canadian law, which isn't entirely crown law, it also has common law in it. Under Canadian law, the sovereign Queen of England can be tried for a felony. That's right in the criminal code. So they're lying when they say they're just immune from the law, just like the Pope. Yeah, under church law, he can't be tried. But under the law of the land, natural law, common law, you're damn right he can be tried. And he already has been tried. As a matter of fact, Pope Francis is a wanted felon. He's a convicted criminal under the the ruling of the International Common Law Court of Justice in July 2014, when the verdict came out, that yes, he's guilty of being involved with this Ninth Circle and in covering up child trafficking in the Catholic Church. There's a standing arrest warrant out for this guy. So, I mean, we have the right as citizens to do that, and we have to understand what this sovereignty really is. It's in the minds of the rulers, it's a way to act with complete impunity. We are above any law, and we're not accountable to you. And they brainwash enough of us to believe that, and they get away with these crimes.
They do, and you can always see the acts of admittance in what we're saying in the words that they use and the way that they phrase things. Of course, in this case with Sarah, you'll have Francis come out, Bergoglio comes out, and he says he's a man of the time. The Vatican says he's a man of his time, which basically means that, yeah, he committed genocide, but we basically stand behind it. And it's no different than about a year ago when all of this news was coming out about pedophile networks operating within the Vatican and the trafficking of children, and Francis comes out and says, well, this is like a black mass. Remember that when he comes out and compares the trafficking of children, which is directly linked to the Vatican, to a black mass. And then just even recently, when you have all of these issues with Planned Parenthood chopping up bodies, which is a eugenics program, selling them for experimentation, which is what's been done with natives in the past before. It's still done today. And Francis comes out and says, well, look, we're going to give all priests the ability to forgive women for abortions because anybody who begs for forgiveness should be forgiven.
Well, it shows you, too. I mean, the Vatican is this amazingly lucrative dog and pony show where they can say anything they want and never be held accountable for it. So one day they say, that abortion is an unpardonable sin. And the next they say, well, no, it is pardonable. Francis, by doing that, is representing a whole strategy of appealing to liberal Catholics in America, most of whom support birth control and et cetera. Bergoglio was one faction within the Vatican, Ratzinger being the other one, who's kind of orienting, you know, there's a power struggle going on. It's like the age of the two popes during the 14th century, one in Avignon, one in Rome, and they're excommunicating each other. That's very much what you get politically going on in Rome these days. So Bergoglio was saying all this liberal stuff, except when it comes to Indians, of course. But on the other issues, he's trying to appeal to liberal Catholic opinion because that's kind of the faction represented in the papacy. But it's all the same old bullshit politics, you know?
Yeah, and it always has been. And unfortunately, it probably will be for a long time unless we continue to grow this movement and get a small faction of people who, as we've seen in the past and as we saw with news today from the ITCCS, a small group of people can make such a drastic influence on history. You know, I tell people all the time, when you look at the conviction of Ratzinger, there's a handful of people, including yourself, that was responsible for getting the Pope to step down. That has never been done in history, and just a few people was able to get one of the most powerful, at least perceptually, people in the world to step down from their sovereign position of power. And he, even to this day, can't leave the Vatican because they know he will be tried on crimes of criminality against the trafficking of children.
Well, and also now forcing Pope Francis, Jorge Bergoglio, to cut short his very important American visit. For folks tuning in, that's part of our breaking news, is that we've compelled the Pope to go home about a day earlier because we shone a light on this World Meeting of Families in Philadelphia, which is a child trafficking network within the Catholic Church.
And for those who might not be aware, I mean, I could get into the details, but let me ask you, what are some of the comments that he will be making when he comes here? What is the itinerary and what is the schedule of his discussion to the Congress and to the United Nations General Assembly?
Well, I mean, he's generally talking about, you know, one of the common themes he's going after is world poverty. And he's talking about how global warming and all of these environmental threats are also a threat to the poor of the world.
I think Vatican has enough gold to feed the world.
Well, I was going to say it's the same old hypocrisy. Is I'm going to appeal to you folks to you're supposed to act better than I'm acting, sitting here on the throne of the wealthiest corporation on the planet. So, I mean, if people can bear that kind of hypocrisy, fine. But what's behind a lot of the rhetoric, what he says is irrelevant. It's designed to get on the good side of American Catholic opinion because he is forming a geopolitical alliance with the U.S., with the West. As opposed to this kind of counter motion of Ratzinger trying to take the German banks and the Vatican money into the arms of the Russians and Chinese. I mean, we're getting that from Europe, from people in the system, this analysis. So, I mean, you know, there's that political agenda he's doing. But of course, as we, the reason he reacted with such alarm about us highlighting this thing in Philadelphia is that World Meeting of Families is a front for this whole massive child trafficking network that he's an integral part of. So, again, you know, people have got to look behind the mask.
Yeah, I haven't been doing this as long as you are. I'm much younger. But have you seen in the past couple of years more of a direct influence on these people, such as the Vatican, in terms of the work that you do? And let me relate that in terms of the question to, let's say, in the past, maybe the actions that we've taken have not necessarily made such a direct impact in the sense that maybe the Vatican doesn't necessarily respond, and now things have gotten so obvious that they have no other choice but to respond or be really implicated in a much more direct way. What do you think about that?
Well, what I've noticed, Ryan, is that over the years, at first it was like trying to move a mountain and nothing seemed to be happening, but we gained a critical mass. And I don't mean just within the obvious numbers and in the kind of looking at this in a worldly sense. Spiritually, you could feel this counter momentum building. And when it broke forth, you know, when I conducted the first exorcism outside the Vatican in October 2009, things began to happen very rapidly after that. So we know there's other forces at work that we're not even aware of. As long as we keep standing in this truth, that spiritual power acts through us. Doesn't matter however many we are. It's literally a David Goliath story here. And we're in the Valley of Allah with our slingshot bringing down Goliath. I mean, it's happening as we're speaking. But I do want to say as well that what you just asked and that whole thing of how this unfolded over 20 years is going to be the subject of a new documentary film we're working on called Unrelenting. It's a sequel to Unrepentant, and it's going to talk about everything you mentioned and how this came about. So it's a very important documentary, and it has historic significance just to show people how we bring down these rulers and make a shift spiritually in the world. So that's important. We're almost at the bottom of the hour, and I want to bottom of the half hour, and I wanted to just introduce, I thought it would be nice to introduce Jack, a little bit of humor. This is what we're going to hear at the break now is a little piece by George Carlin called The Sanctity of Life, which I think was triggered by Bergoglio's sudden change in Vatican position that, yes, it's okay now to absolve women who have abortions. And they're always going on and on about the sanctity of life, so-called. So let's listen to George Carlin, and we'll be back after the break.
But, you know, the longer you listen to this abortion debate, the more you hear this phrase, sanctity of life. You've heard that, sanctity of life. You believe in it? Personally, I think it's a bunch of shit. Well, I mean, life is sacred? Who said so? God? Hey, if you read history, you realize that God is one of the leading causes of death. Has been for thousands of years. Hindus, Muslims, Jews, Christians, all taking turns killing each other because God told them it was a good idea. The sword of God, the blood of the Lamb, vengeance is mine. Millions of dead motherfuckers. Millions of dead motherfuckers, all because they gave the wrong answer to the God question. You believe in God? No. Dead. You believe in God? Yes. You believe in my God? No. Dead. My God has a bigger dick than your God. Thousands of years. Thousands of years. And all the best wars, too. The bloodiest, most brutal wars fought, all based on religious hatred. Which is fine with me, hey? Anytime a bunch of holy people want to kill each other, I'm a happy guy. But don't be giving me all this shit about the sanctity of life. I mean, even if there were such a thing, I don't think it's something you can blame on God. Now, you know where the sanctity of life came from? We made it up. You know why? Because we're alive. Self-interest. Living people have a strong interest in promoting the idea that somehow life is sacred. You don't see Abbott and Costello running around talking about this shit, do you? We're not hearing a whole lot from Mussolini on the subject. What's the latest from JFK? Not a goddamn thing. Because JFK, Mussolini, and Abbott and Costello are fucking dead. They're fucking dead. And dead people give less than a shit about the sanctity of life. Only living people care about it, so the whole thing grows out of a completely biased point of view. It's a self-serving, man-made bullshit story. It's one of these things we tell ourselves so we'll feel noble. Life is sacred. Makes you feel noble. But let me ask you this. If everything that ever lived is dead, and everything alive is going to die, where does the sacred part come in? I'm having trouble with that. Because, I mean, even with this stuff we preach about the sanctity of life, we don't practice it. We don't practice it. Look at what we kill. Mosquitoes and flies, because they're pests. Lions and tigers, because it's fun. Chickens and pigs, because we're hungry. Pheasants and quails, because it's fun. And we're hungry. And people, we kill people. Because they're pests. And it's fun. And you might have noticed something else. The sanctity of life doesn't seem to apply to cancer cells, does it? You rarely see a bumper sticker that says, save the tumors. Or I break for advanced melanoma. Ah, viruses, mold, mildew, maggots, fungus, weeds, E. coli bacteria, the crabs. Nothing sacred about those things. So at best, the sanctity of life is kind of a selective thing. We get to choose which forms of life we feel are sacred, and we get to kill the rest. Pretty neat deal, huh? You know how we got it? We made the whole fucking thing up!
And we're back.
That was fantastic.
George Carlin on the sanctity of life. He's an amazing, he's passed on now. But anyway, no, I urge people to especially listen to his Religion is Bullshit one and Saving the Planet. Those are my two favorite. They're up on YouTube. You know, Ron, I think it's relevant, especially he talked about the selective nature of our humanity. And, you know, when we're talking about the whole thing of religious genocide, it's so written in spades on every, especially the Catholic Church, which is historically the epitome of what we're talking about. They employ a selective humanity. If you're inside the circle, you're worthy of life. If you're outside of it, you can be conquered, destroyed, enslaved, all perfectly legally. And that's exactly what happened on the Junipero Serra plantations. And in honor of his selective humanity and Catholic genocide, he's going to get turned into a saint. So, I mean, you know, this is exactly the problem we're talking about. As a matter of fact, you know what the official term for the Inquisition was in Europe, the Catholic Inquisition? Auto de fe, which in Latin means act of faith. So it's an act of faith to torture and burn people to death because they're not Catholics or they have a different point of view.
And then you get a repentance from God by going to the Pope and he clears all your sins up.
Which is part of the other big lie, as if one man could ever do that. But, you know, the whole thing is just complete nonsense. I don't get, Ryan, maybe you can answer this. How is it that so many people get drawn into this? And I'm not even talking about Catholics who are brutalized and brainwashed from day one. I'm talking about like an atheist friend of mine who says, oh man, the Pope's doing good stuff these days. Why? Because he read about it in Time magazine that the Vatican helps to own? You know, they own the bloody thing. I mean, what do you think they're going to say about him?
Well, I think there's a big issue with language and perceptions and the way that people assume what certain words mean when other people use them. So for example, you see this a lot with the conflict that goes on in Israel and Palestine with the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, which Israel is now being investigated by the International Criminal Court for war crimes against humanity. And Israel then has the audacity to say that this is anti-Semitic when the Palestinians are also Semites. The point is, when you observe something like that, most people say, well, okay, you know, the Palestinians are terrorists, and it goes both ways. The point that I'm trying to make is that it's so incredible to me when you see the way that people react to something like that. They'll make all of these claims and they'll use all of these different words like anti-Semitic or you're anti-Israel. And the average person that sits back has this assumption that all life matters unless obviously maybe it's been threatened. So they think, well, maybe Israel's been threatened by these people. That's why they've committed also mass genocide, which goes back into biblical times. But the problem is that the Israeli military, not the Israeli people, but the military actually doesn't consider Palestinian people to be human. So under their justifications, they don't see it any different than killing cattle. And so when you look at the history of the church, they see people that are outside of that clique you talked about, mm-hmm. outside of what George Carlin said, the big club, they don't consider them to be people. So when Junipero Serra comes to California and he forces people to convert to Catholicism and they refuse, well, they're whipped, they were beaten, and if they still refuse to conform to Catholicism, to alter their religious beliefs that were suppressed, mm-hmm. then they just slaughtered them. And the church doesn't see that as murder because they don't consider these natives to be people.
Right.
At least that's the way that I see it.
Absolutely. And the important thing that people need to realize is that this stuff continues. It hasn't stopped. Bergoglio's comment is proof that it's not only going on in their mind, but in practice. One of the people who we plan to have on the show fairly soon is a man called Matthew McDaniel, who he lives in Oregon, and he worked and lived among the Akha tribesmen of Thailand. And one of the reasons he got deported from Thailand about 10 years ago, he had an Akha wife and children, and they're now living in Oregon. But he found out that the Catholic Church was running slave plantations in the northern highlands of Thailand. The Rotary Club and the Catholic Church run these places where children are brought in, and the Akha children are the main ones used in the sex trade in Bangkok. And the U.S. government is a slice of it. The CIA admit that they use these child brothels as a way to blackmail politicians. But the Catholic Church is operating, as we speak, these plantations that the kind as Junipero Serra ran 300 years ago. And they're slave labor installations. They farm out these children for sex tourists. And that's going on right now. As a matter of fact, one of the Catholic agencies operating this is called the Scarborough Foreign Mission, based in Toronto, Ontario. They've got an office and everything. And so, I mean, folks, this is not crimes of the past. These are ongoing crimes. And I think that leads us to the whole issue that I want to flag in the final part of the show, Ryan, and that is, what do we do about it? You said, let's start with the issue of sovereignty, because people think, oh, you can't do anything about it. These are governments and churches, and they're beyond the law, and they've got the law on our side. Let's talk a little bit about sovereignty to lead into that discussion.
Yeah, I actually have an article here from Business Insider, and it says 32 incredible powers Queen Elizabeth II has that you didn't know she had. And it lists a bunch of crazy things like, oh, she owns all the swans on the River Thames, and people laugh about that. She doesn't have to have a driver's license to drive like she drives anyway. And then in the middle of it, Kevin, they throw in there things like this. Well, she's the head of a religion. Queen Elizabeth is the head of the Church of England. And then also she's immune from prosecution, the article says. It says all prosecutions are carried out in the name of the sovereign, and she is both immune from prosecution and cannot be compelled to give evidence in court. But that's not true, because she's actually been convicted of crimes. And as you said, there's an arrest warrant out for her arrest. So what are these people talking about?
Well, they're making it up. And in fact, anyone who does this simple history course in English, the history in England, knows that not only was the monarchy overthrown in 1649, but even after it was restored 11 years later under the Stuart dynasty, there was a thing called the Glorious Revolution of 1688. And what it did is it enshrined sovereignty not in the monarchy, but in Parliament. Okay, so the sovereign power in England is not the Queen, it's Parliament. Queen has to consult Parliament on everything. So they're out and out lying when they say those things. And that's reflected, like I say, in the criminal code in Canada, where it says, yes, in fact, monarchs can be tried. Now, that applies to popes as well. The reason, if the popes were sovereign, Joseph Ratzinger wouldn't be hiding out inside Vatican City. He'd be walking around freely. But the point is, they're only sovereign under their own law. Their little club rules. Natural law gives every one of us the right to arrest people, including kings and popes and rulers and judges and cops, if they're threatening our livelihood, our children, our liberties. Everyone is empowered to do that. And that's why we can set up common law courts and even republics when the government is against us. So, I mean, let's keep all that very clear when we're talking about sovereignty.
Well, that's a great point, because if Ratzinger was sovereign, he would be able to just leave Vatican City, walk around and do whatever he wants. But he's not. And it's all a matter of the public's perception and acquiescence. There's also something called normalcy bias, Kevin, and I think so much nowadays with social media and people being numbed with entertainment and medication and just completely oblivious to everything that's going on in the world for the most part. That's why it's so hard to have a conversation with people. They don't even have a full vocabulary to be able to communicate how they feel, and that's part of a genocidal agenda, especially here in the United States more recently, where we've got colleges taking out certain words and certain letters and saying you can't use this word, can't use the word American, it's all offensive to people. But there's something called normalcy bias, and this is the idea that, let's say you're in your house and you just are so used to going into the kitchen and you want a glass of water. You turn the faucet on, you get a glass of water. Well, what happens when the water doesn't come out? What do? People don't know how to take care of themselves, and they've been so conditioned in this normalcy bias, they just think that this is the way things have always been. And even as things change, they change so slowly. The water is turned up to a boil so slowly, they don't realize things have changed, and they always believe it's always been this hot in here, even though the water started out, you know, ice cold. And over time, as things change, you can move an entire free sovereign society into a totalitarian police state, and nobody notices, because as children are born and they're raised in that system, they think, well, you know, 24-hour surveillance, that's, I've had that my whole life. It's nothing bad. It's always kept me safe.
Yeah, well, that's really obvious when you, especially when you look around today. And I think, you know, the reality is that we're talking about a conscious minority who are free to act. I spent years trying to appeal to the general audience, and the reactions are exactly what you say. It's always minorities that start waking up first and are able to act. But that's fine, because we've shown what minorities can do if they're organized and consistent and very clear. And they've declared a separation, independence from the system, when they don't have fear anymore taking on the system, because they know most of the power of the system is an illusion anyway. And when we push, it gives. Look what just happened in Philadelphia. Look at how we curtailed the Pope's visit and how we even made Bergoglio hide out in Rome. I'm sorry, Ratzinger. And so it brings us back to the basic question all the time on our show, which is we are giving people a model of how to act. And we're blazing a trail in this sense. One of the groups listening to us right now, they're based in Sacramento. They are acting on what we put out. And in fact, at the end of October, early November, they're sponsoring public meetings and some workshops in Sacramento to try to get the people in that part of the world organized to take back their country, take back the laws, set up common law courts. Some of the issues they're looking at are these smart meters, child trafficking in their community. These are the things that they're actually going to be training themselves in workshops to set up these courts and train themselves as common law peace officers. So this is replicated all over the place. I just use Sacramento as one example. It's very important, though, because in Northern California, during the next period, there is groups acting on the Junipero Serra evidence. In fact, one of the things that people are planning is to go to some of these sites where these plantations were, where these churches are, where the kids are still buried, and make a stink and bring a lot of this kind of attention to bear. So some of those things people should be aware of, but the important thing is, in your own community, start what we're doing. Carry it on, itccs.org and kanatarepublic.ca.
Yeah, I think it's also important to realize from a historical standpoint, Kevin, whether you're in America or any other nation that's declared independence in some form, during the American Revolution, the founding fathers, those considered patriots, the guerrilla warriors, if you will, you know, these people, I think, to a lot, were seen as radicals, were seen as terrorists. Anybody who was just sort of stuck to that image of the authority of the redcoats, of the British crown, they saw these founders as terrorists, as we are now labeling them again. And that's how I think the system sees us. And you made a great point last week where you said, if someone is interested in getting involved in what we're doing, and they say, well, I can do that, but am I going to get in trouble for it? They're not really ready to take on the responsibilities, because you have to understand it's not about working within the system. You have to withdraw consent, withdraw dependence, form your own independence, and not submit to the system anymore. Then you become truly free.
Well, and we already are in trouble. If people say, am I going to get in trouble? Well, folks, look around. The house is coming down around our ears. You're all in trouble. The question is, what are you going to do about it? So that's kind of a simple fact people have to wake up to. Also, now, one of the things I wanted also to flag for people is In October, after Bergoglio has gone home, there is a Canadian election coming up, October 19th. And we are going to have a number of shows looking at the whole question of how Canada is a criminal illegitimate power. And in fact, because of the oath of allegiance that members of Parliament in Canada take, an act of voting in Canada is actually an act of treason. Because here's the oath of allegiance. It says, every member of Parliament, every judge, every civil servant in Canada takes the following oath. Quote, I swear true allegiance to Queen Elizabeth II and her descendants, unquote. That's it. So you're signing over your authority to a foreign criminal jurisdiction, and the member of Parliament is therefore not accountable to you at all, but to that foreign criminal called Queen Elizabeth. And so to even vote in Canada under that system is you're committing an act of treason and criminality. So we're going to be talking about alternatives. One of the things that the folks back east are talking about doing is setting up their own voting booths where people can vote for the Republic. They can start running their own candidates for local people's assemblies. They can start taking back. And don't forget, in the American Revolution, that's exactly what they did first. They set up their Continental Congresses under the nose of the British. They set up their own common law courts. It's interesting that in New England, the first group of armed American revolutionaries were the Green Mountain Boys in Vermont. And they had for years been fighting land speculators and British judges. They went into the courts and nailed the courts shut and burned the deeds and the mortgages and to protect the farmers of their land. Those guys were the first to went into action after the shots were fired at Concord and Lexington. Now, in other words, we've got to take action for ourselves, people. That's how revolutions begin. So just wanted to flag that these are kind of some of the upcoming themes in future shows.
Well, even the act of paying taxes under the U.S. Patriot Act, anybody supporting a terrorist group in any way, shape, or form, financially or ideologically, is guilty of terrorism and can be tried under an act of treason, essentially. And basically, anybody who pays taxes to a government that is supporting terrorism and supporting these criminal organizations, I mean, that's the whole point, is you can withdraw your consent by either not paying taxes, not participating in these rigged elections that don't really mean anything at all, and establishing your own system, your own republic, your own sovereign authority that is not subject to these totalitarian criminal regimes that give you the perception that they are immune from all of the laws that they try to impose on you.
Right. Well, now look what's happening. The head of the most criminally organized body in the world, the Vatican, he's coming at the invitation of the U.S. government, who's paying his way. You know, the American tax money is going to pay this convicted felon to come and propagate his genocidal doctrines to the U.S. Congress, at the U.N. General Assembly. This is not just collusion. This is helping, you know, crimes against humanity today. And the U.S. government and the whole system is in cahoots. So then the question now becomes, if you're not going to be colluding, you have to break away from that system and create something else. This is what we're all about.
What would you say the first thing for people that want to get in to the movement that we're doing? What is the first thing they can do outside of educating themselves and understanding history? Because not everybody has a major interest in that. What is the first thing they can do?
Well, we say simply to people, gather 12 people in your community and sign the charter, which establishes a local people's assembly. Now, this is very important because by establishing a local legislative body, you are creating the foundation for everything else. The common law courts are not just legal bodies hanging up in the air somewhere. They are founded constitutionally by, you know, legislative bodies. That's what, you know, when the high courts are established, it's coming out of a legislative body. It's not just the other way around. So in your community, start gathering, debating local issues, bringing in your own laws, elect your own sheriffs, and get the existing authorities on board with you. We're finding that, especially in America, sheriffs are listening to what we're saying. In the Midwest, on the West Coast, and even in places like Philadelphia, New York, we are finding police actually coming to us. And on an issue like the child trafficking, a lot of cops are very upset because they know it's going on under their noses. They want to do something about it, but politically and because of their pension or whatever, they can't. But they are looking to people to carry the torch, and they are providing us a lot of information and help on the ground. eventually those people will come over to us. We know that from the history of revolutions, the police and the army eventually come over, but we have to create that counter mass. We can't have our energy dissipated by working through the system. We have to pull it out. That's the whole discussion of creating our own Xi energy. We establish our own ground, and the enemy has to respond, as Bergoglio has just done, once again, to our initiative.
That's absolutely right, Kevin. I wanted to bring us back really quick before we're done with the show today to Junipero Serra and just relate a little bit of information I found out about some of the missions that he established in California to what you were saying about basic slave plantations. And many of the natives who refused to convert to Catholicism, as I mentioned, were whipped and they were beaten. The church calls whipping and beating these natives until they submit. They called it an educational tool because they see them as basically heathens. I know that the research I did from 1769 to 1835, the missionaries that worked within the missions that Serra established baptized 90,000 natives along the coast of California. Now, here's the part about basically prison camps. Most of the natives who were also baptized and then put into their own missions, lots of them tried to escape and run away. A lot of them had converted, I guess, because they didn't want to suffer the consequences, but they tried to run away, and the military actually chased them down, punished them, and then dragged them back to the missions. So, I mean, it was, and it still isn't, even in modern times, a form of slave-type camp. It's a type of slave camp in a physical sense, and now today it's a slave camp not only in a physical sense, as we know that there's sex slavery, there's slavery forced work and stuff like that, but it's also a type of mental slavery, and when people try to run away, that normalcy bias and that program they have really prevents them from psychologically assessing and addressing the issues that face us as a species, because people have been led to believe that they should think instead of thinking collectively, to think as an individual, and that's individuality, when in fact individuality is accepting everybody else and not outcasting other people because they're different than you. And if I think we can do that and think as a collective group and come together in both the people's assemblies and just to come together as a community forming grassroots movements, that is, as you said, that is like the foundational pillar that can really start this new revelation, this new spiritual awakening that can lead to further and further and further direct influences on these criminal establishments.
Exactly, Ryan. Now, let me ask you, just announce your show again, and then I've got a final announcement at the end before we sign off in 3 minutes.
Absolutely. So the show is The Secret Teachings. We air every Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and every Sunday, so tonight, 9 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. You can find links to the program at thesecretteachings.info. And tonight on the show, we're actually talking about liberty. I have a guest named Gavin Syme who pulls over police officers and recites laws and tells them that you're improperly using police cars and things like that. At the end of that show, though, I also have you, Kevin, on the program for a half hour for a little bit of an update and a little bit of a detailed background on Jorge Bergoglio's visit. So that's tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All the links, information for the show, as well as my lengthy article called Junipero Serra and the Church's Longstanding Policy of Genocide with many links, is also at thesecretteachings.info. Help pass that around and get the word out.
Thank you, Ryan, as always. And just a final announcement, I urge people to go to itccs.org, not only for the latest announcement of this curtailing of the Bergoglio's visit to America, but before that, there's a complete itinerary, and that's where you need to be in those cities, at those protests, at those spiritual convergences, and especially during that time, withdraw your energy from the system at every level, including mentally and spiritually, and put it towards this new regime we are establishing. And we'll be back next week to carry on this discussion. Next show will be the last one before Bergoglio's visit, so it's very important you spread the word and get people to tune in and educate them about all these things. Most importantly, take action. And we will be back in 1 week. And until then, follow our work at itccs.org, kanatarepublic.ca, K-A-N-A-T-A, kanatarepublic.ca, and write to us, republicofkanata@gmail.com. Thank you, all listeners, brothers and sisters. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.